The book of Exodus. Exodus tonight, chapter 17. Mentioned two verses, quoted two verses, put them on the screen last week in Deuteronomy. One was in chapter 3 and one was in chapter 20. And they were verses where it says that our God will fight for us. Our God will fight for us. And we're going to be just developing that theme a little bit more tonight. Soon after the Red Sea rescue, or the rescue through the Red Sea, the people of God move on. And having got across the Red Sea, they spend some time celebrating and rejoicing, and they're whooping and they're dancing and they're playing their tambourines. They go for it. They know how to worship. You know, when you see God at work, don't be afraid to go for it. Yeah? When God is at work in your life, you want to worship, then you worship. If you want to be expressive in worship, then you go. And if you want an example of that, then read some of the Psalms. Read how they worship on the seashore of the Red Sea. You know, it's worth getting excited about, isn't it, when God has done something good. And we don't need to worry about that at all. But we don't stay on the victorious side of on the shore for very long, do we? We stay on the victorious side. We stay on the rescued side, but we can't stay on the seashore and just have one long praise party the whole time. The Israelites had to move on, and soon their rejoicing is forgotten as one thing turns to another, and it just seems to be one test after another for them. First, they come to an oasis, and you can read about this as you go through Exodus. They came to an oasis where you can imagine if you're wandering around in the desert and you're on a journey and it's hot and it's dry and it's dusty and you see the palm trees in the distance and there's no nice Pepsi Cola or whatever it is still there. You just want to go. And the best thing you're looking for is a nice cold drink of water. And they got to the oasis and they found that the water was undrinkable. You imagine how you would feel, longing for the drink, and it's undrinkable. Shortly after that, the food runs out. And then shortly after that, not only is the water undrinkable, but there's no water at all. They're dry. In each of those situations, in each of those circumstances, what we read is that God came to their rescue in a spectacular way. God just did it. The water that was undrinkable, God told Moses what to do, and he just had to, did he throw a stick in? Was it a stick? And he threw it into the water, and God made the water drinkable. They were hungry, there was no food. And God gave them a daily supply of tasty, versatile food that they uniquely called, what is it? That was what they called it, what is it? Because they didn't know what it was called. We call it manna, but manna simply means what is it? And every day they'd go out and the manna was on the ground. God did it. They didn't have to do anything. God just did it. When the water stopped, they grumbled, they moaned, as they tended to do. Oh, it would have been better off for us back in Egypt. Whatever we come out here for, and we're just going to die. And oh, Moses. Moses prays, and God says, strike the rock. You know the story, don't you? Most of you have read it. You've heard dozens of sermons on it, probably. Moses hits the rock, and the water comes out of the rock. God did it. All right, so Moses was involved. The people weren't. But water came out of the rock. The common denominator in each of those situations was that God intervened and rescued them without them so much really as lifting a finger. And we all love it when God does that for us, don't we? Maybe you look back in times in your life and you just see, you didn't do it anything particular, but God just worked things and he put things in. I can go back through my life and our life as a family, and you just see things where God is, he's just providing. You stand back and you think, wow. It's just like, wow. But we're all, most of us, long enough in the tooth to know that it actually doesn't always work like that. And That's what we see in the next situation. So we move into Exodus chapter 17. The beginning of that chapter is the water from the rock. But I actually want to come in and just for a few minutes think about the encounter they had, or the fight, the battle they had with the Amalekites. So I'm going to read Exodus 17, verse 8 through to the end of the chapter, 8 through to 16, and then just break that open a little bit for us to encourage us tonight when we feel that we're in a fight, and to give us some instruction as well. The Amalekites came and attacked the Israelites at Rephidim. Moses said to Joshua, "Choose some of our men and go out and fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hands." So Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses had ordered, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the hill. As long as Moses held up his hands, the Israelites were winning. But whenever he lowered his hands, the Amalekites were winning. When Moses' hands grew tired, they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. Aaron and Hur held his hands up, one on one side, one on the other, so that his hands remained steady until sunset. So Joshua overcame the Amalekite army with the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this on a scroll as something to be remembered, and make sure that Joshua hears it, because I will completely blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven." Moses built an altar and called it, "The Lord is my banner." He said, "For the hands were lifted up to the throne of the Lord. The Lord will be at war against the Amalekites from generation to generation." Tonight, I just want us to learn, go back and maybe remind ourselves of some of the things that we can learn from this battle, this encounter with the Amalekites. Owen, have you got my PowerPoint up in there? Smashing. Here we go. So we're still thinking this whole idea of God of Israel will be your rear guard. And tonight we're thinking about the Amalekites. First one, it's quite important for us to understand who the Amalekites were. They were actually close relatives of the Israelites. Amalek, the man who gave his name to this people group, was one of the sons of Esau. You probably all know who Esau was. Esau was the brother of Jacob. Jacob was one of the forerunners of the Israelites. Okay, he was like the Israelite tribe's dad. He had 12 sons, and the Israelite nation came from those 12 tribes. So Amalek and the Israelites, or the people of Amalek and the people of Israel, they were like cousins, whether it's first removed or second removed, but they were blood relations. That's the point. I think you probably know the story, what happened between Jacob and Esau, and Jacob's deception, and how he tricked Esau out of the birthright. And as a result of that, Esau swore his vengeance on Jacob, and that split in the family issued down through the generations. And so Amalek, one of Esau's children, hated the children of Jacob. That's why there was this clash going on. But it's significant that when the Israelites came out of Egypt, the first physical encounter they had, the first physical enemy that they had, were the Amalekites, the people who were related to them. Now, can we draw anything from that? I think we can. Because, and it's this, that the biggest and the worst enemies that we face are often those that are closest to home. And I'm not talking about the wife or the husband or the children. I'm talking about the ones that are close at home. The Bible speaks about the enemies that we have. And it speaks, first of all, about the flesh. It speaks about us, the flesh. When the Bible speaks about the flesh, it's speaking about what we are. Don't we all feel that? I'm not teaching anything you don't already know, but we just need to remind ourselves of this sometimes, just to be realistic about what we're up against. Sinful desires, which war against your soul, Peter spoke about. Sinful desires. That's us. It's about us. It's our own nature with its selfishness. Yeah, one day we'll be completely renewed because of Jesus, and when we see him and when we're like him. But until that time, that old nature, it still kicks and we still fight against it. The word war in that reference from Peter, it means strategies. It's like the old human nature in us has its strategies to work against us. Some of the biggest battles that we have spiritually are with our own nature. And Joshua, we read, had to fight with Amalek until evening. It was all day. All day. And our fight with ourselves will go on through all our life. Now, I'm just a real young person still. Some of you are really old. Those of you who are over 70, do you still have to fight the battle? Still fighting against yourself? More so now. That's interesting. Yeah? Brian, do you still find that there's a battle going on inside you? I'm picking on you because, you know, you're one of our respected men. You know, and we sometimes think, Super Brian, you know, he's so good and he carries the frustrations of life. But do you find that there's a battle going on still inside you? How old are you? 78, and you still got the battle. Hey, that's great news, isn't it, for those of us who are young, you know, in our 50s. Let's not be taken by surprise. That battle goes on from beginning of day to the end of the day. Dawn till dusk, we fight the battle. Let's not be surprised about it. So there's the flesh. There's the world. Paul speaks about the pattern of the world in Romans chapter 12. It says, do not be conformed to the pattern of the world. There is that pressure, isn't there, of culture, of society that tries to mold us, to shape us and our thinking. And you spend too much time listening. You can't be off it if you're out at work and you're out amongst them. You can't be off it. You know, the attitudes of the people around you, whether it's unbelieving family members or people at work or people that you mix with, your friends, wherever it is, you know, it affects you. You pick it up, and poor attitudes, poor language, disrespect. It's the world. In Corinthians, it says that bad company corrupts good character. We fight against it. It's a constant thing. It's the way it is. And of course, there's the flesh, there's the world, and the devil, Satan, who is the leader of the world. He used to have us as his slaves. We used to be his. He doesn't like it now that Jesus has redeemed us. He wants us back. He's trying to destroy everything about God. He's constantly looking out for people to attack. He's like a roaring lion, the Bible says. We've been rescued from him. His fate is sealed, but he's not yet executed. Praise God, that's coming when Jesus returns. But he's not yet executed. We've got some tough battles, and they're often very close to home. Let's not be surprised about that. So how do we fight that, and how do we overcome it? Well, Joshua, let's think about him for a moment. He's on the valley floor, and he's got to go out and he's got to do some physical fighting. This is the first time, as far as we know, that the Israelites actually had to take up arms and stand and make a stand and fight physically. Until now, as we just said, God had done it all for them. It's a bit like a parent and a child. Those of us who are parents, we know when the children are young, you do it all for them. And part of parenthood, I've discovered, is trying to get the children to stand on their own feet. And you can't get the children to stand on their own feet and make wise decisions without letting them go sometimes. And it's scary, isn't it? Sal and I were talking about this on the other day, Friday, when we were together, you know, and you watch, you can't control them all the time. You have to let them go. You guide them and you pray, you know, you want them to make wise decisions, but they've got to do it themselves sometimes. And that's how God is with us spiritually as well. We often start off as children and God will just do things and he'll take care of us and he'll kind of move the seas out of the way and say, there you go, just walk through it. And he'll get rid of the enemy and he'll provide the water and the manna and all of that kind of stuff. But we can't live like that because he calls us not just to be little babies, mollycoddled and weak and needing to be. He wants us to be men and women of God. He wants us to be mature, able to stand up, able to work with him. Remember, he's called us to his children, but he's called us to be an army as well, hasn't he? He's called us to be soldiers with him. He's called us to join with him in the fight against the enemy. He says to us that in the new world, the new heavens and the new earth, we're going to be rulers with him. Now, I don't know exactly what that means, but it speaks of not being children, doesn't it? It speaks of responsibility and he's training us up now to take up that responsibility. So he's not going to treat us as little babies all the time. He's going to sort of unsettle the nest and he's going to just kind of push us out. And that's what was happening with the Israelites. And that's the picture here. So there comes a time when he's going to get them to do some fighting as well, rather than just spoon feeding them all the time. And so for his purposes and for our good, for what he's got in mind for us, God doesn't just treat us as babies. He doesn't just treat us as recovering souls in a hospital. You know, churches can be like a hospital. God is part of what it is. But it's not just a hospital. It's not just a nursing home where we sit. He wants us to get well and to get fit and to be fighting for him and to be fighting with him. Now, he knows that we can't do that by ourselves, but he does expect us to fight. Now, I don't know what you're going through. I know some of you, some of the stuff you're going for. I want to say to you tonight, you know, you've got to fight. You've got to do what you can. You've got to use the means that God has given to you. Moses said to Joshua, Joshua, take your men and go and fight on the valley floor. And I'm sure that Joshua would have had his men and he'd had the trained with the weapons. They'd have had their swords. They'd have had their shields. They would have been using the skills that they had been given. And we have to use the skills that God has given us, the abilities that God has given us, the things that we know to fight against the enemy, whether it's the flesh, whether it's our culture and society that tries to mold us, or whether it's against Satan. We have to take up the shield of faith. We have to take up the sword of the Spirit. And we have to fight. We can't just leave it for other people and leave it for God. And sometimes it gets tough. It's tough in our lives. Sometimes it gets tough as a church. And we have to do what we can do then. We've got to be involved with God in the fighting. Otherwise, we're just going to say, well, leave it to God. That's just presumption, isn't it? We mustn't just presume on God. He wants us to be fighters with him. So there's Joshua, and he's fighting. But of course, you know and I know that's only half the story. Because Moses said to Joshua, you go and fight on the valley floor, and I'm going to go up onto the hilltop. And I'm going to take the rod that God has given me, the rod that's been with me, and the rod that God has used. It's not a magic rod, but it's a rod that represents the presence of God. And Moses had to fight on the hill. It wasn't a physical fight, but this represents the spiritual fight. This rod of God, this rod that he had, that represented the presence of God with them. And he takes it, and he holds it up. Now, whether Moses was actually praying physically, I don't know. But I am convinced that the symbol here is of Moses depending on the Lord, holding up the rod. And when it comes to us, the application is obvious, isn't it? We've got to fight, but we also need to depend on the Lord. When they were depending on the Lord, when the rod was held up, when God was being lifted up, when God was, you know, they weren't being, when he wasn't being lazy and tired and letting the things of God go down, they were winning. The rod goes down and they start to lose. We need both things in our life. We need to be fighting hard. We need to be fighting hard, doing all we can, being disciplined in our spiritual life, using the abilities and the gifts and the skills and the knowledge of Scripture and sometimes just taking tough decisions to do what is right and not to do what's wrong, not to give up. But we've also got to balance that with lifting God up and praying to God and asking for his help and his intercession. The two things here go hand in hand. The rod is up, the people win. The rod goes down, the people lose. When we're lifting God up, he will help us. He will fight for us. He will fight for you. He will do that. That's his promise. If you grieve him, if we grieve him, if we ignore him, leave him out, just carry on by our own ways, we can't expect him then to be answering our, you know, our hopes and our wishes. It's got to work both ways. And we need to be with the Lord. And we need to be praying. We need to be with the Lord, asking God to help us and to fight for us. Someone said that it takes intercession on the mountain as well as intervention in the valley for God's people to win the victory. It's not all down to how hard we try. We could say as a church, it's not all down to how well the pastor preaches. I desperately want to preach well. You say, yeah, you've got a long way to go, Stuart. Okay, I'm aiming. I'm trying to get there. I pledge to you. I feel wretched when I've gone home and I just think, oh, no. Dad, I feel for you having to listen to me sometimes. If you're not a preacher, you don't know what it's like to go home and think, that just bombed. I want to do the best I can. We as a church, we want to do the best we can. We want to be welcoming, don't we? We want to be sharing with people. We want to have a program. We want to have events. We want to have things on. We want people to think well of us. We want to have nice music. We love our nice building. We have a nice projection system, some nice lights, nice comfy chairs. We want to do our best for God, don't we, at whatever we do. Any publicity we send out, we want it to be good. We all know that these things alone aren't enough, don't we? Can't rely on those things. They're fighting the battle just like human means. Well, Joshua had to fight the battle with human means, but he needed something else as well. And we've got to behold and get in hold of the Lord. And we've got to be with him, and we've got to be pleading with him, and we've got to be praying to him. As a church. And the same goes in our individual lives. Same as in our individual lives. We've got to fight. And we've got to pray. This is what the Lord says to us through his word this evening. Don't give up. Life can get tough at times. Life can get discouraging at times. It can get hard, can't it? You know, churches go through seasons like that. And, you know, talking to a number of you at the moment, I know that some of you, you know, we're missing some people. We're going to miss John and Wendy. We said this at the members' meeting recently. You know, we look and, well, there's 32 of us here tonight, I think, all told. A couple of years ago, 3-4 years ago, we were touching 50. Now, don't tell me that we're not thinking, oh, that was, you know, they were good days. We miss it. We think, oh, I hope we don't lose too many more. And we can get discouraged if we're not careful. The battle's the Lord's. We mustn't get discouraged. We need to keep on. In our spirit, in our own lives, there can be times when the battle is hard. I don't want to minimize how hard it is week after week, month after month, year after year, in difficult situations where things don't seem to change. And God doesn't seem to answer the prayers as you'd like them to. I want to say to you, don't give up. Whatever you do, don't give up. The prize, the New Testament says, comes to those who run to the end. There is no prize for those who give up the faith. It speaks about Demas in the Bible, who left and went away for love of the present world. I think the Old Authorized Version puts it, for love of the present world. You know, Judas, we talked about him this morning. I'm not saying that any of us are Judas. I'm not saying that. Just warning us that we don't get weighed down in the fight, in the battle, and give up. There is a fight. That's the way it is. I wish I could say it was easy. Joshua had to fight. Let's keep fighting. Let's keep doing what we're doing. Moses is on the mountain and he's praying. And we've got to pray now. Some of us are still young enough to be in the battle, fighting on the valley floor. Some of you will say, well, I'm too old to be doing all that stuff. I've done that still and I'm old and I get tired and I haven't got the energy. Then get up with Moses. And you might say, well, I can't even be Moses. Then get hold of his hands and hold his hands up. Do your bit. There's something for everybody in this bit. We can't force the analogy too much. Because the point is, we can all be prayers, can't we? We all should be prayers. Life groups, prayer meetings. Most people find it encouraging when they're with other people, praying and bringing the things to the Lord. Don't forget those times. If you can make it, then come along. It will help us all. And it works together with the Lord. But if you can't get to a prayer meeting, you can't get to a life group, then take the time at home. Just spend it with the Lord. It's dangerous naming names, but I know what a prayer warrior of John's Vi is. She's crucial to us as a church. The time she spends praying. You know, John and we're missing John's prayers. We're missing Ruby's prayers. These people. Who's going to take up their role? It's us, isn't it? We're the ones. Well, we could look at some empty chairs. Oh. But we're the ones that are here. We're the ones the Lord is speaking to. And the Lord's calling us to be prayer warriors. Be up on the mountain, holding up the hands of those who are doing the other stuff, praying for those who are involved. It's work for us all to do. Don't feel there's nothing to do. What the ministry you've got, the ministry of prayer, is crucial and it's critical. May the Lord help us to be a dual church, fighting on the valley floor, with everything we've got involved, committed into it, not leaving it for everybody else, but also praying. Pleading with the Lord, seeking him for his intervention so that for his glory we'll get the victory individually over the Amalekites that are close to home, flesh and the world that push in on us, and that for his glory he'll see the church, people being saved, people being built up, kingdom expanding. That's what we